There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Monday. Another hour of live local talk coming your way right now. And Representative Chip Brown is going to join us in just a second. Before I do that, though, it's just minutes. I did want to talk about one of these texts. Thank you for lots of links and stuff in the text here. My discussion of digital federal dollars, right? Not crypto, but a digital currency. Gus says, and my beef was this discussion: can they move to this? Can the Fed or some other group move to this without having something done in the legislative branch? In other words, Congress. Gus says, well, you go to war without Congress declaring war. Congress don't have anything to do about digital dollars. Excellently conjugated sentence, Gus. So I don't like the fact that we go to a police action, right? Without Congress passing that, I don't like that either. I'm pretty consistent. If anything, consistency is something I'm consistent at. But saying that, do you understand my fear that if they allow without passing legislation, which I don't want it to happen in the first place, but if it would, if there's no congressional legislation that says how we would transfer currency into this digital form, is different than just retooling the faces of the president. Listen, something this weekend, I was spending $100 bills when they had small faces. In retooling, that's Treasury stuff. That's fine. I don't need Congress involved. But if we're going to advance into some world where in some future time, be that months or decades, that you could have your money throttled, seized, frozen, whatever, because of something the feds didn't like, and now they're in control of a digital form of that currency, then I want something from Congress there to say, you know, where are the guidelines? What do we approve? Because if you don't, then what, when you protest, what are you protesting? There's no law to protest. There's nothing to change. That's why it's of interest to me to have something... If this does happen, which I really don't feel like I want it to have happen, but if it does happen, there has to be some legislation behind it. All right. On to our first guest of this hour. He's number one in your hearts, but number, 105 on the charts. It's District 105 Representative Chip Brown. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean. Great to be with you.
Good to have you on here as well. And so a lot of talk, of course, is going on here around the station. People coming on there who are going to be, going to be on the ballot coming up on November 8th. But I keep harkening back and reminding folks, too, there's also amendments on there. And the first thing, I guess, I want to caution people, don't get done with the names and just not do the rest of it. And here to talk more about that is Representative Brown about amendment number one on the ballot. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about this thing that people think is already law in the state.
Well, I appreciate that, Sean. The amendment one is Anaya's law. And, if amendment that has an opportunity to really impact people's lives in Alabama, it's amendment one. And, what it does is currently under Alabama law, the only time you can hold someone without bond pending trial is if they're charged with capital murder. And so what this does is it allows a prosecutor to request that an individual be held without bond if they commit a violent Class A felony, rapes, kidnappings, violent domestic assaults, terrorism. Currently under Alabama law, they would make bond. And so... What this does is it allows a prosecutor request to a judge that an individual be held without bond if they're accused of a violent Class A felony. The judge can grant the request and or deny the request. If he grants the request, then you have an evidentiary hearing. You present evidence. And you have to meet a threshold of the person has to be either an imminent threat to the community themselves or a flight risk. And the evidence that's presented in that hearing is not admissible in an actual court case. So the judge, after hearing that, can deny bond or he can grant bond. And what that does is that allows prosecutors and judges to have an extra tool to really keep dangerous predators off our streets. And it's named after Nia Blanchard, was a college student at Southern Union Community College in Opelika. And she'd gone to a funeral and in Hoover and was returning home to go to school, dropped her brother off at Auburn. He was a student at Auburn. And she stopped at a convenience store. And it's not like a out-of-the-way convenience store out of a dark alley or anything. It's right near the Walmart in Auburn on the main drag right there. And she stopped and went in to buy some potato chips, all caught on security camera. There was a gentleman, well, not a gentleman, there was a man in the store.
Thank you. Stop using that gentleman word. Yeah, dirtbag.
And he spotted her, followed her out to her car, and kidnapped her, took her off, assaulted her, and killed her. But he was out. He was staying in a hotel behind the convenience store, but he was out on a $200,000 bond for crimes that he had been accused of that included kidnapping, robbery, assault, and he had the victims in the car with him when the police pulled him over. So he was going off to kill them.
Yep.
Had an extensive record of arrest dating back years. He's a gang member out of Montgomery, and those guys always make bond. And he made bond, and he killed her. And so this has the opportunity to stop what we call the revolving door of crime and allowing dangerous predators back on our streets. But we have to vote yes on this. And this bill passed. It's the rare bill that actually passed the House and the Senate unanimously, with Republicans and Democrats actually coming together, knowing that we had to strengthen our laws in Alabama, and the governor signed it, but in order for it to take effect, it has to pass on November 8th.
Yeah, so all the people that have, I know, Lord knows you've heard it, because I've heard it a bunch, people say, well, why didn't they use Anaya's law in that through our system, even though that did all that passing, until you get the votes on November 8th, it is not law. And is this one, Representative, is this, it was so bad at one point, and then I remember like a decade or something ago, they said, okay, we're going to try to make the amendments make more sense, put it in regular speak. They're still sometimes confusing to people. So go through this. If they want this to be the law, they want this amendment to the Constitution to Anaya's law, they vote yes in this case?
They vote yes.
Okay.
Yes. And actually, yeah, now we have, before I joined the legislature, they created a commission to look at every single amendment to make sure that it's plain speak, that people understand a yes is a yes, a no is a no, that sort of thing. Because I do remember years ago,
it was horrible, man.
Oh man, they would write them in such a way that you're going, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to vote yes or vote no. I want it to pass, but for it to pass, do I vote no? If I want it to fail, do I vote yes? I mean, so this, we really made sure that when we wrote this, that it did two things. One, the language that's on the ballot is extremely clear, and it spells out every single crime that a person could be held without bond for. And so you actually see that on there. And so, and that a yes vote is an actual yes. And then we were also very careful that when we wrote this legislation, we worked with the Attorney General's office. We worked with constitutional scholars. Representative Matt Simpson from Daphne had a big hand in writing this language and making sure it was sound under the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution, mm-hmm. because what I didn't want to happen was this passes and then Southern Poverty Law Center or the ACLU files a lawsuit and then they overturn it on grounds of Eighth Amendment, which is you have a right to reasonable bail. And so this is actually modeled after what they do on the federal side. The federal side, they deny bond for violent criminals all the time. And so this is very sound from a constitutional standpoint. It will save lives. Law enforcement tells me that. Judges tell me that. And matter of fact, today, the Big Ten mayors, Mayor Stimson was one of them, had a press conference today supporting Amendment 1. They know that it'll help keep Alabamians safe.
Yeah, and kind of the street speak I put it in, if you've sat and watched the evening news and the picture comes up of who they're the suspect in something, somebody they arrested, somebody they're looking for, and the picture is a fairly fresh mugshot from the last time they did something violent on the street, and you go, what the, when you see that, that's what this addresses.
Oh, and this happens literally a week doesn't go by, Sean, since I've sponsored this legislation, that I don't get a call, a text, an email from someone, either in law enforcement, a judge or a prosecutor or a family member, that involves some case across the state of Alabama where some individual was let out of jail because then they committed a very serious crime, but they were let out because of what our Alabama Constitution says. They were let out, and then they committed a terrible crime against someone else, but yet they should have never been out. And this still leaves intact the presumption of innocence but of the defendant, but it also allows the judge to use another tool to keep that person locked up pending trial that has a propensity to commit another violent crime. And they know who's going to commit those violent crimes. You can just tell historically, and you can tell by a person's record. You can tell, and so this allows them to do that and to keep people safe. I mean, that's a reason why it passed unanimously in the House and the Senate with Republicans and Democrats. I was amazed when I brought this legislation that there's some members that are, I would say, tend to be more soft on crime, like things like cashless bail and that are a disaster. But they all had stories. They all knew people that had been affected by violent crime and that had been impacted by someone who was out on the streets that shouldn't have been out on the streets, that had committed a violent act against someone that they either knew or was a constituent of theirs. And so that's why this thing passed unanimously.
Hey, Representative, can you hold on a second, go to the news and come back? I got a little bit more to quiz you on here.
Sure.
All right. Very good. Coming back, more with Representative Chip Brown right here on Midday Mobile. News is next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 123 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. Representative Chip Brown, our guest, for a few more minutes here. And I know March is a long way off, but looking at session coming up, I actually was kind of focused on this. I told you during the break because I was looking at the amendments, and y'all will go many times through the amendments between now and November 8th. But Amendment number 2 was, that local governments can spend ARPA money on broadband expansion and some other projects. That got me into thinking about ARPA Part 2, and what y'all are going to do with, spending billions, Congressman. I mean, it's a lot of money, and then you get more projects, right?
Well, yeah, it is. We're looking at, it's going to be close to $1 billion or right at $1 billion, and which is, it's a lot of money. And it's the third round of that ARPA funds coming from the federal government. But this one's going to be a little different because it doesn't allow for the consideration of losses that you took under COVID. So that changes the dynamic of it. And, you know, the restrictions are the first round was really done in such a way that it had to be spent on COVID health related items. And then the next round, it was a little bit broader, but we could spend a certain amount of it on infrastructure. And so that money was put into water and sewer, municipal and county government, and in water, you know, private water systems. You know, if you have rural water and sewer. And I thought that was good. That's a good way to spend it because, you know, we have a lot of areas in Alabama that are often overlooked, and it wasn't done by political patronage. It was done by need. And so you have those areas that are more rural that, you know, we have places in Alabama that have municipal water systems that haven't worked in years. And so that's stuff that happens in third world countries. And we, you know, it's just not right to have that. And so especially you can't bring in jobs to areas that don't even have adequate water and sewer systems. So that's how we've spent the last round. And this one, you know, I think there will be some focus on the infrastructure side. We're still trying to figure out from the federal government what the rules are going to be concerning how we can allocate the money. I know that we have a lot of needs in Mobile County, and particularly in South Mobile County. And I know myself and the rest of the delegation from Mobile County are going to fight to try to get that money down here as much as we can.
Now, okay, and let me just say this. Caveat number one, I do believe we should have working water in a rural area before broadband. So I'm not anti-broadband,
Well,
water first, then broadband.
I think that was a good way to do it, yeah, exactly.
Okay, so the other thing comes up with all these different ideas on spending then, what about sending some back? And, you know, that's this discussion that goes back and forth, API and other groups talking about a tax cut. I hear the discussion of a rebate. What's your feeling now? I mean, I know March is a long way off, but do you have any feeling? Are you talking to folks in leadership?
Well, I think that's a possibility. I know Senator Arthur Orr has talked about wanting to do something along those lines. And, you know, we've allocated some of that money. Like, on the last round, we also spent money on prisons. You know, we allocated money for prisons. And people, you know, they were, particularly on the Democrat side, were upset about that. But here's the reality on that. That was money that lessens. We had to do something with the overcrowding in our prisons. We're under a federal mandate that's dated years ago, and that's eventually going to come full bore where they're going to start letting people out because of overcrowding. So we had to have a construction plan, and we are moving forward with building prisons. But by using some of that ARPA money, we were able to lessen the amount of bond issues that increases a burden, not just on us, but on our future generations of people in the state. So I think that was a wise way to spend that money, to be honest with you. Now, as far as a rebate, I support the concept of that. I do support that. I think, but one thing I think we have to look at what's more meaningful. I mean, can we restructure our tax system? Could we, you know, do away with grocery taxes, as you and I have discussed mm-hmm. before? Is there a way to use those funds that could offset some of that and look at restructuring our entire tax system? I mean, And you've got to think, too, down the road, we're heading for a situation where maybe a rebate would be good for people because of what's coming economically. I mean, if you just look on the horizon, on the federal side, we're actually in very good shape right now in Alabama. But what's next year or 2 years or 3 years down the road going to have in store for us after some of the stuff going on at the federal level actually trickles down? I mean, we're seeing inflation go through the roof. We are in a recession. I don't care what the federal government says. I mean, all you got to do is go to the store and look at your wallet. I mean, we are in a recession. So I think we're heading for lean economic times. We just have to make sure that we're mindful of that. So I do think the possibility of giving money back, giving a rebate to people would, would be beneficial if we can do it.
Yeah, and we just got 30 seconds left here, but I mean, that's also one of the reasons that with those things facing us, and just because it's the right thing to do,
right.
Grocery tax reduction, because I mean, if I get a rebate, I mean, any dollar's a good dollar, but if I get, you know, 300 back from the state versus going forward not paying full freight on groceries, it makes a bigger impact in my life and more people.
Yeah, sense. I agree totally.
All right. Good to have you on. We'll talk again. But a reminder, y'all, number one amendment, Anaya's Law. And it's written the way that if somebody wants what you said to have happen, they vote yes.
That's right. Vote yes on Amendment 1.
There we go. Representative Chip Brown, thanks for your time.
Hey, thank you, Sean. Great to be with you.
All right. Coming right back, more Midday Mobile. Actually, I got a cool event coming up, too, this weekend in District 105. So we'll talk about that as well when we return.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. You heard Dr. Bill's forecast, possible rain in the mix. And that's good. Something knocked the dust down, right? Out there, I put some pictures up on my Instagram feed over the weekend. People are like, how did you know, how much Zyrtec did you have to take? Listen, I got enough afflictions. Thank goodness that allergies aren't a main one. Like, I can survive the dust and all that. So, although I may be a little raspy today. But yeah, Dr. Bill said, yeah, and then rain coming up this weekend as well. I think that's Saturday, though. Sunday, I think, is looking better. Speaking of which, so I mentioned this at the end of the segment there with District 105 Representative Chip Brown in 105, Dolphin Island, and their 2022 Spooktacular Dolphin Island Gumbo Cook-Off Competition and Festival taking place at the rodeo site on the island on Halloween Eve. So that's Sunday. And you've got, obviously, gumbo to eat. The best gumbo cookers out there competing, so we get to benefit as we taste and sample that. Also, plenty of ghoulish activities and inflatables for the kids. How about the grown-ups? By the way, tickets available online. You can go look at our Facebook feed. I know we linked it through on our Facebook feed. If you go to facebook.com/FMTalk1065, and also you can get your tickets at the gate. But that's going on Sunday, Dolphin Island, the gumbo cook-off. I'd like to somebody be with a bowl of gumbo while they're doing the jumpy thing. I know inflatables is the right term, but I've always called them the jumpy thing. Go in there and do both. All right. Okay, let me get to this Ukraine story here. You following this, that Russia could plan a dirty bomb pretext, according to some Western countries? Does that make any sense? So Russia is saying that Ukraine is going to detonate a dirty bomb. Yeah, what is a dirty bomb? It's a explosion that's not the value of it, and the value is probably a tough word, but in a military sense or a terroristic sense, it's something we worried a lot about after 9/11. It's not in the explosive potential, but you have radioactive waste that's packed in with the explosion. The explosion happens, and it puts that radioactivity into the air, into the people, and you contaminate an area, right? So the same way that... So the Russia, and I'm going to get in more detail how serious this is going forward. Like I said, I believe in the Ukrainians defending their own sovereignty. At the same time, I don't want to get us blown up doing it. And that's a strange opinion. I know you have to be 100%. Either Ukraine's a devil or Ukraine's an angel. In reality, Ukraine is Ukraine, but they do have the right to defend their sovereignty, in my opinion. And obviously, yes, we are fighting a proxy war. We're sending them the equipment and intelligence, and not just the equipment, the intelligence to help them fight Russia. And like I said, I'm a child of the 80s. Most of the time, if somebody's fighting Russia, I'm like, yeah, it's pretty good. Fight Russia. But let me go back to this. So the messaging out here is that Ukraine would set off the dirty bomb. So Shoigu, I guess, talked to Lloyd Austin a couple times and said, and other NATO leaders out there, and said, we believe that Ukraine is going to set off a dirty bomb to try to, you know, to bring NATO into the mix or something like that. First of all, the same way another unpopular opinion. So if you think Ukraine is okay to defend their own sovereignty, then you have to then believe that Russia blew up their own pipeline on Nord Stream, which doesn't make sense. So you can be. There is a way to be a critical thinker and look at different stories until given more information. I don't believe the Russians blew up their own pipeline. Now, everybody, who did it? I have theories, but I mean, I have zero, nothing but speculation. The same way I look at the fact that the Russians wouldn't do that, Ukrainians detonating doing a false flag to detonate a dirty bomb in Ukraine to try to increase NATO support beyond, I guess, where it is now and escalate. And that's what I worry, escalate. I mean, we're just having discussions about tactical nukes and responses. And I mean, this is it's scary territory. I know you're like, nothing will happen. Really? Do we know that? But it makes no sense to me that Ukraine would set off a dirty bomb inside Ukraine. Now, I understand false flags, but this is one. I mean, think about these people, what they've seen in nuclear power disasters. Think about Chernobyl. Think about doing that to your own people anyways, let alone in a country that is living with that. Which, remember the story about the Red Army being in there when they occupied Chernobyl and the commanders had the Russian soldiers dig trenches in the forest there that's so radioactive and disturb the soil? I mean, golly. So it makes no sense to me that Ukraine would be setting off a dirty bomb in their own country. So, of course, then you flip around and say, well, is this a pretense? You know, Russia's floating this out there, so if it happens, it wasn't us. I mean, but at this point, too, Russian Defense Minister Shoigu has been on at least two phone calls between him and Lloyd Austin, which is like the most between the United States and Russia in a long time. It tells you how dangerous, how thin the ice we're treading on is here. This is... From the Wall Street Journal, they said this morning, Western officials are trying today to decipher Russia's motives in alleging that Kyiv is preparing to deploy a so-called dirty bomb in Ukraine. The U.S., France, and U.K. warned Russia that, quote, the world would see through any attempt to use this allegation as a pretext for escalation. The pushback follows an unusual flurry of phone calls yesterday, here you go, by Russia's Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu, and his U.S., French, U.K., and Turkish counterparts, all the rest of those, of course, are NATO members. He told them the war in Ukraine was moving towards a more dangerous phase and Kyiv might soon deploy a dirty bomb. I mean, it's like he's telegraphing, and the Russians have done that before. So have other, it's not just the Russians, but the Russians have been, you know, what we say somebody else is doing is what we're doing. It goes on to say, dirty bomb, which combines conventional explosives with radioactive materials such as cesium or cobalt, would contaminate territory without immediately killing a large number of people. Western officials, however, that say they can't be too dismissive of Russia's dirty bomb claims because Moscow could be signaling that it is preparing to use such a weapon itself in a false flag operation and use it as an excuse for deploying the nuclear option. Now, one way you could tell it would the dirty bomb be in the Donbass, or would it be like in, where's the far west of, Lviv? Would it be somewhat of a tell? This is, we're just talking about things that are, should scare everybody. And not like I'm going, get scared, run for the, it is a dangerous, dangerous conversation here that's happening. The first thing that goes nuclear, and it's something I talked about, whether it was Chernobyl or Zaporizhia or any of those other plants too, is if there was a strike, okay, if there was a strike on a nuclear power plant, and you know the Russians using the Iranian drones, which by the way, the headlines would all get all up in arms, Iran now aiding Russia. Of course they're aiding Russia. Move on to story number two. Of course they're aiding Russia. Russia's going to have an ally there, and Iran's pretty happy to, you know, do something that hurts us while they're busy quelling a rebellion. If there was a strike and it hit a nuclear power plant, just something to think and get your response to. I think we have mentioned this before, but if you're new to this conversation, what if the strike went in and released, it caused a meltdown of a nuclear power plant? So a purposeful strike or, we missed, sorry. And then that radioactive contaminant drifts into NATO countries, does it trigger Article 5? This is something I've asked of elected officials, former Congress members of Congress that have been on this show with me. I've gotten either I don't know or I think that would be an Article 5 violation. So with this dirty bomb, and once again, I just the same logic that keeps me from believing those that want to tell us that Russia destroyed their own pipeline tells me that Ukraine doesn't want to set off a dirty bomb amongst their own people with radiation for a country that has lived with the aftermath of Chernobyl. So where does it go from here? And if it is a false flag and the Russians say, well, look at that, they deployed a dirty bomb in the Donbass, hurting the Russian-speaking people here and all this, so we must retaliate on Kyiv with a tactical nuke. So this is, do you think the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand was a big deal in the aftermath of the precursor to World War I? This is what we're talking about right now. And it seems to get like third placement on the news, third or fourth placement. I don't know. Leaves me worried and concerned in that. But I guess the good thing is knowing that there's still decent communication lines between the United States and Russia, where they're, I guess they said at least twice the specific conversations happened between Shoigu and Austin. So, all right, coming right back. Got some text on this and calls as we return to Midday Mobile.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, welcome back to Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. And time for a checkup with Vascular Associates of South Alabama. And from them, Dr. Lee Ferguson. Good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, obviously, vascular is the conversation. First of all, maybe I need to go back to some remedial. Vascular means what?
So, we treat patients for vascular disease. So the body has blood vessels, arteries and veins that bring oxygen and nutrients from the heart to the entirety of the body. And what we do is we treat various sundry diseases associated with those blood vessels, mostly arterial, but also some venous.
So what are, I mean, like, so those diseases are expressed how? Like, give us some things that we'd know, okay, that's a vascular disease.
So when we're talking about the arterial side of things, there's two primary ways we go. Either occlusive disease, meaning plaque or clot that builds up in the artery and causes a limitation of blood flow, or aneurysmal disease where the blood vessel itself becomes diseased and dilates and becomes larger.
So it's constriction or expansion. It's both,
right.
Both things are
right,
an issue.
Right, both. Absolutely.
The porridge has to be just right. It has to be, you know, there's a...
That's right.
Okay. So, I mean, what type of patients are at higher risk for these vascular conditions? Like, yeah, describe somebody here.
So, classically, patients who are 65 years or older are at risk for both aneurysmal or arterial occlusive disease. Patients who've had a history of smoking, diabetes, end-stage renal disease, high cholesterol, and sedentary lifestyle.
Now, what about heredity in this? Because there's, I mean, some of these things you're saying people are making choices, but
right.
Sometimes people are like, hey, it runs in a family.
Especially with aneurysmal disease. It can happen in patients who have a weakness in the wall of the artery, and that can actually be passed down from...
So there is some heredity to it.
Absolutely, especially. So if you know your father or your mother or any other first-degree relative, or even some second-degree relatives like grandparents, you know, granddad died of an aneurysm, you know, 30, 40 years ago, then when you, you know, as a man you, at 50 years old, you should be screened, and that's something we can do in the office with a simple outpatient test. You don't have to be NPO. There's no x-rays or anything like that. We do an ultrasound. We look at the aorta, which is the large blood vessel in the belly, to look for dilatation. Aneurysmal disease can cause, you know, it is a risk for twofold. So if it happens in the abdomen, the thing we worry most about is rupture, where the okay. artery itself can become so large in bursts. And then in the extremities, especially in the legs, the abnormal blood flow that occurs in an aneurysm can actually cause the artery to clot off, and it could place you at risk for losing the leg.
Well, you're getting both. You're getting like an explosion or a rupture at one point and shutting down another.
Right. It kind of depends on where the aneurysm is and how best to go about treating it.
Dr. Ferguson, I kind of, when he went through that, I was like, he's talking to me specifically, age-wise and family history-wise, but you mentioned something I think this is important too. It shouldn't be, but it is. You talked about the procedure of getting screened. You made this seem like I wasn't going to have to take a week off of work to do this.
Absolutely not. So we have some of the best ultrasound technicians in our office in the area, and we do screening procedures in the office. They use an ultrasound similar to like when a lady has a pregnancy and you're looking at the baby. Well, we use a similar technology to look at the arteries and veins in the legs, the abdomen, the neck, the arms. We can screen pretty much anywhere except in the chest cavity with an ultrasound.
Okay, so then let's say you see something that is worrisome or whatever, that and something we need to treat. Let's talk about that surgery. How do vascular surgeons, is that the right, treat the disease?
Right, so surgeon can, for a vascular surgeon can be a misnomer, so it's not necessarily open operations. There's a there is an algorithm that we go through based on not only what is your underlying disease process, how healthy are you, and then as a surgeon we can pick a tool that best fits the patient. So if you need open surgery, then we're going to talk about that and we're going to get you set up for surgery. But before we get to that, you may be a better candidate for what we call a percutaneous or through the skin type procedure that's minimally invasive, something as small as a straw.
Wow. So, I mean, this is something I am always floored by when I talk to physicians, how technology figures in all of our lives. But in the world of medicine, it seems like every 10 years or maybe it's sooner than that, that we used to do it this way, and I don't know on vascular if you had to cut everybody open, you know, 20 years ago, but now subcutaneous doing this?
Absolutely. So, you know, 20 years ago, if you had a blockage in the artery in the leg, you were most likely going to get a bypass, and that involves a hospital stay, either one really long incision on the leg or two incisions in the leg, where you have to take a conduit and reroute blood flow around a blockage. Now we have technology, which, like you said, in the medical world, grows exponentially decade by decade. Now we can take a patient in a lab in our office. Just like putting an IV in, we put a catheter in the artery, run the catheter around. We can actually go through a blockage and rotor-rooter, if you will, or drill it out.
Yeah.
And then if that patient needs a stent, just like you hear about people getting stents in the heart, we can do that in the leg.
And you've in this procedure you're talking about, we don't have that long incision. We don't have the hospital stay.
We don't. You come in, you get your procedure. We monitor you after your procedure, and then you generally go home. And patients like it because they see the same people when they come to see us in the office to check in, the same people for their procedure. They get the procedure and they go home the same day. Oftentimes, they miss about a half a day. Now, they generally take the whole day off of work. But
you won't tell on me, will you?
No, absolutely not.
And let's talk about this. And you're talking to a lot of people may say, okay, I got to get that screening you just described me, Dr. Ferguson. Or if they go through, do they have to get a referral to make an appointment with you? Can they just call Vascular Associates? How does that work?
So, not necessarily. You can call my office and say, hey, my grandfather had arterial disease, my father had arterial disease or aneurysmal disease, or even varicose veins or venous disease. I'd like to be seen. There are some insurances that require referrals, but for the most part, people can self-refer to our office. And one of the great things about it is we can get your ultrasound and you see the doctor the same day. So you don't have to get the ultrasound and then worry about it for a week. Oh, no, what do I have?
Right.
We try and make it a one-stop shop. It takes a little longer on the front end, but you leave the office knowing what you have and what the plan is. And we take great pride in tailoring our treatments to what the patients need. We don't have to refer you out to another physician or another doctor to treat your vascular disease. We can do it all.
You're talking about a peace of mind.
Absolutely.
Dr. Ferguson, great to meet you, and thanks for what you're doing in our city.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
All right, Dr. Lee Ferguson with Vascular Associates of South Alabama.